Josh Mahoney is running in 2020 as a Democrat with the intent to unseat the incumbent, Republican U.S. Senator Tom Cotton. The 38-year-old from Fayetteville is planning three events this week around Arkansas to formally kick off his campaign. He'll be making stops in Fayetteville, Little Rock, and in his hometown of El Dorado. He joins me on the phone. Thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me, Brandon. I'm excited to be here this morning.
Well, let me go ahead and come right out and ask you, why should Arkansans vote for you to be U.S. Senator?
Well, you know, it comes down to some basic things here. You know, Senator Cotton has been running for president since he left Arkansas when he was first elected to office. And if you look at the people that donate to his campaign, his number one donors, Goldman Sachs and, of course, the Koch brothers and people like that are in there very significantly. You know, he's in D.C. working for them. He's not working for the people of Arkansas. And I want to be senator from Arkansas because I think we deserve to have someone in office that is actually working to represent the people and the needs of the state as opposed to what Goldman Sachs or the Koch brothers might need done.
Is that where your campaign slogan, Putting Arkansas First, comes from? Is that what that means?
Absolutely. You know, Senator Cotton doesn't have a piece of legislation he can hold up that he's done on behalf of Arkansans. You know, when discussion of the tariffs came up and the effects on our farmers, knowing that we're an agricultural state, you know, he basically belittled their struggles and told them to take it on the chin. And, you know, I took quite an offense to that. And so I want to make sure that we're working to have the people in Arkansas represented, that we're working to bring, you know, economic prosperity to everybody where they live in Arkansas, and also make sure that we're standing up for our farmers.
So what are your top priorities if you become senator?
Well, you know, there's two big ones for me. Number one, of course, is still health care. You know, in 2019 in the United States, no one should having to be choosing between paying for medicine and paying for food for their family. But when I was at the Arkansas Single Parent Scholarship Fund, you know, I met a couple of folks that you'd have a mom working two jobs or three jobs, and she doesn't qualify for any kind of government aid, but she's not making enough money to pay for private insurance. And suddenly she's in a position where she's having to choose between feeding her family and paying for her prescriptions. And I think health care is a right. And so, you know, in their communities, people would take up collections to help that mother make her bills and be able to afford her prescriptions. So, you know, I think there's always a place for private insurance, but I think that we need a public option offered through Medicare so that anybody has that opportunity for essential health care benefits that's going to be there for them anytime they need it. But beyond that, you know, you and I were talking before we started the interview about how much we love Arkansas and the diversity of the state, the geography in our small communities and how wonderful they are. I want somebody that grows up in Blytheville, Arkansas, to be able to have a future in Blytheville, Arkansas that's going to take care of them and that they know that their children are going to have a future there too. So I want to work to make sure that we have access to careers wherever we are in the state so we don't feel like we have to move to Little Rock or that we have to move to Northwest Arkansas, or worse than that, even, you know, out of the state. So I want to make sure that we've got those career opportunities, you know, whether those might be through apprenticeships and trades and technical training or opportunity to go to college, but make sure that that's local. So, you know, you can build a life there with the family that you love and the town that you love, and the community that supported you and the community that you want to grow old in.
Speaking of being local, you were actually here in Jonesboro recently to speak with NEA Indivisible. What was that meeting like?
Oh, it was great. It was great. I enjoyed coming out. And, you know, we'll be in Jonesboro many more times over the coming months. But it was a ton of fun. We were over at Legends Barbecue. Had a great visit with Reggie over there and Renee from NEA Indivisible. And, you know, I met many of those folks when Chintan Desai ran for the U.S. House over there, and it was great. We spent a lot of time talking about things like the environment, immigration reform, you know, very deep into policy. And I always love that when I visit with the Indivisible crowd because, you know, it's not just, well, what's your view here, what's your view there? It's like, well, let's dig into the material a little bit and talk about what options might be or what might be a good way to address, you know, climate change or something like that.
And will you be making other trips like that around the state, especially in parts of Arkansas where they may not get heard from in the Capitol or in Washington?
Absolutely. And that's a huge priority for me because so many places in the state do feel like they don't get heard. And, you know, when a lot of us got involved this last cycle in 2018, we would knock on doors and the person in the House would say, you know, I haven't had a Democrat knock on my door in 40 years. And so, you know, I think one of the issues in the state is people forget that we have a lot of Democrats and independents, but they don't show up to vote because we don't talk to them. And I don't think that's anybody's particular fault. I think that, you know, our party infrastructure had to be rebuilt and things like that. But if we're not out talking to people, they're not going to come vote for us. And so we've got to get out there. We've got to run people locally, and we've got to be accessible in person so people know what a Democrat is like and what they're fighting for and not what Fox News might tell them what a Democrat is.
So, as you know, Washington has become even more divided as ever. If you become senator, you will be a blue dot in an ocean of red. How will you be able to work across the aisle with the rest of the state's delegation and getting things done? Because, you know, it's an all-Republican delegation, so how will you be able to do that?
It is. And I'll tell you this, you know, Senator Boozman, while he and I don't agree on policy all the time, is a very nice man. And at the end of the day, I do find that he has places that he and I agree. You know, he's been very sympathetic to DACA recipients. He's been very sympathetic to health care issues in the state and also workforce training. So there are certain other places there that he and I can come together on. But beyond that, you know, I want solutions for the people of Arkansas. I'm not in this to get a Democratic win or in this to stop the Republican win on an issue. I'm in this for the Arkansas win. And whatever's going to be right for the people of Arkansas, I'm going to work with. And, you know, if that means the good idea comes from the Republican side, I think we need to acknowledge that and do the work to get it done. One of the examples that's really frustrated me is we all know we need a big investment infrastructure in this country. Both parties do. You know, our roads are deteriorating. We have bridges that are dilapidated. And particularly in the South, like Arkansas, where our interstate system is very much, you know, the arteries and veins of our economy. We all know we need that, but nobody wants to, you know, come together to create that success because they don't want the other guys to be able to put that down. It's like, oh, we did that. Well, I don't care. We've got people in Arkansas busting their butts every week just to get by. And, you know, they don't need more bickering. They need solutions. And so I want to make sure that we're working to provide those solutions for them. And I don't care who gets to say, hey, we did this or, hey, we didn't do that, because we got people that need those results now. And honestly, they need those results years ago.
So I want to switch gears for a little bit. Recently, your campaign released a video blasting Senator Tom Cotton, saying Arkansas needs to fire him. I'm going to play a little clip of that video.
Sacrifice is pretty minimal compared to the sacrifices that our soldiers make overseas.
The Tom Cotton approach has no viability here. He's become sort of the Steve King of the Senate.
I think Tom Cotton's kind of rude. You know, he just is not very friendly.
It was so obvious, listening to the DHS secretary, listening to Tom Cotton, it was so obvious that they were lying.
All right, so I was looking at a couple of the comments from the video, and there were a lot of people who agreed with the message, but there were also a lot of people who showed support for Cotton as well. And as I mentioned earlier, this is a pretty deep red state, and there are a lot of people who love Cotton. And we were talking earlier, and you said that he was one of the reasons why you were running. So how can you convince Cotton's supporters that you're a better person for the job?
Well, you know, we have to think about, one, detailing Cotton's record and showing people that he hasn't been working for the people of the state. You know, he's been working for Wall Street. He's been working for the Koch brothers. He's been working for Goldman Sachs. I think a great example of that recently is, you know, Georgia Pacific down South Arkansas is in the process of laying off 655 people. You know, and that paper mill there is really important employer. And, you know, they're owned by COCA affiliates. And, of course, Tom Cotton didn't say anything about those layoffs happening when he should have been out there working to make sure that those jobs were preserved in some way or been working to increase the economy so that those folks had alternatives when something like this happens that affects everyone's lives in the area. So that's one thing. But the other end of that is, you know, there's some people we're just not going to reach. And we have to make sure that we are helping build a new universe and reengaging voters that typically don't come out to vote or haven't had a reason to come vote in recent years. And so it's a combination of things. Because some people that are very loyal to the senator don't really care so much about policy. They're just very adherent to a certain set of values that they believe that Senator Cotton represents. And, you know, we need to make sure that the people that are looking for an alternative, that would like to see something else done, that would like to have a vision of for Arkansas going forward and optimism for what we can create here in terms of prosperity and future, are getting that message and are excited to come out and vote for me as opposed to Senator Cotton.
There was a recent poll from NPR, PBS NewsHour, Martis that suggests that independent voters partially agree with some of the policies that Democrats are pushing, such as legalizing marijuana and regulating prescription drug prices. But they aren't sold on the party's more liberal issues to make them believe in the party's overall message, such as slavery reparations and abolishing the death penalty. So how will you be able to tailor your message to convince independent voters here in Arkansas who may lean a little conservative?
Well, you know, we have to be thoughtful in terms of what's appropriate to Arkansas versus what I might particularly believe as well. You know, with things like reparations and abolishing the death penalty, for one, I think those have to be articulated and also understand what can be accomplished, you know. I know when people have talked about reparations, it's been really about like access to college and access to trade. And I think generally when people hear reparations, they're thinking that it's just going to be a handout of cash or something like that. And that's not really the intent behind it. But beyond that, when we talk about abolishing the death penalty, I go back and forth on that. You know, I think that we owe it to have prison reform so less people are going into prison. And also making sure that we're setting people up for success when they come out, making sure they have access to that skills training and they have a support network and they've been able to earn money while they're in prison. So when they come out and rejoin society, they have feet under them to support them and help them, you know, find those jobs that are going to take care of them when they get out. But, you know, there's certainly room for negotiation on these. And I think having that conversation is important. So it's not so scary. I think that we get caught up in a black and white view of issues and never look beyond the surface. And, you know, that's a byproduct of Twitter culture and sound bites where, you know, we don't get the entire message across. And I think we do have to get the entire message across. And I find that when you do get into details on stuff like that, people are like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think the party's gone too far to the left?
No, I don't think so. But what I will tell you is that we have to keep in mind that different representatives are going to have, and senators, obviously, when I say representative, you know, you can probably think, you know, I have in mind people like AOC and folks like that who are great for their districts. And you have to remember that, you know, Congresswoman Cortez was in a district where the race is essentially the primary. You know, like here in downtown Fayetteville, the general election really doesn't matter. It's always the primary for the Democratic side. And those folks do good jobs of representing the districts they're part of. But, you know, trying to label the party as, you know, based off of one person is unfair, I think, to the country as a whole and the needs in other areas and how elected officials that are Democratic you know, choose to be representing their districts, but also why they got elected to represent their districts, too.
All right. So I've got one more quick question for you. This is not your first time running for office. Back in 2018, you challenged U.S. Representative Steve Womack in your district of Fayetteville. So what's making you want to run for federal office again to try this all over again?
Well, you know, we enjoyed running against Congressman Womack. It was great. You know, this district, District 3 here in Northwest Arkansas, is a plus 19 Republican district, and it's been red since 1966. Nobody's been able to flip it since then. You know, President Clinton ran here years ago, the first office he ran for. But I was really excited with how we did. We raised 256% more money than anybody has in quite a long time. We came closer to defeating Steve Womack than anybody has in 10 years. We brought out about 17,000 new voters for the Democratic Party. And we did that with a few really clever college kids and hard work, and that was about it. You know, and in this situation, the state as a whole is actually not as red as the 3rd District. And so the inroads that we've built here, the institutional knowledge that we've built, and then the talent that we've brought in to bring into the state to help grow our own staff and also help other people running across the state is pretty significant. And so, you know, for me, it's about capitalizing on the successes that we had in the 3rd. So, you know, yeah, we didn't defeat Congressman Womack, but we had a heck of a lot of wins. And we're going to keep building on that. And I think as a whole, we've refined a message and we've got the firepower to unseat Senator Cotton, who's not as popular as Congressman Womack.
All right. Josh Mahoney is running as a Democrat in 2020 to unseat Republican U.S. Senator Tom Cotton. Thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you so much, Brandon. I appreciate the time to visit with you and your listeners about the campaign.
And he will be making 3 stops across Arkansas this week. The first is Thursday night at 6:30 at the Newton House Museum in El Dorado. Then he'll be in the Fayetteville Town Center Friday night at 6:30. Finally, he'll stop by the historic Curran Hall in Little Rock Saturday afternoon at 3. In Jonesboro, I'm Brandon Tabor, KESU News.